Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hello, and thank you for tuning into another episode of the Agency Toolkit. I'm your host, Julia McLaughlin. This episode is sponsored by ReviewRobin, a review management software for marketing agencies to help you guys get your clients more positive reviews. You can check that out at getreviewrobin.com. Now, our guest today is Michelle LeBlanc of Blue Sky Marketing, and today we are discussing remote culture and managing a remote team. Michelle has over 20 years of experience in marketing, both in B2B and B2C marketing. Michelle continually looks for connectivity across industries and technologies that can be leveraged for marketing programs, and she guides her client companies through the vast array of marketing tools and choices to craft winning sales and marketing strategies that achieve their business goals. Thanks so much for joining us today, Michelle.
Glad I could be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes. So let's dive into a couple of questions so that our listeners can get to know you a little bit. So to start, tell us where you're tuning in from today.
Today, I am in my office in New Orleans. Blue Sky Marketing is based in Houston, but our team has been distributed, and I'm currently splitting my time between two cities.
Very nice. And tell us, what motivates you as an entrepreneur?
For me, I actually enjoy watching companies grow. I grew up in an entrepreneurial family, and actually being able to see revenue growth, being able to see businesses achieve their goals is what makes me excited. So Nice. It's always that enthusiasm for it. Watch, the CEO says, we met our revenue goals, we hit our targets. That's what keeps me motivated.
Yeah. I grew up in a family of entrepreneurs as well. And I feel like you will never be satisfied just working a 9-to-5 job. It's just ingrained in you in such a deep level that you have to build and create things yourself.
Absolutely.
So how did you get into digital marketing?
Interestingly, it goes a ways back. I was building some of the first websites back in the late 90s and
very cool.
Started working on a database migration project from legacy servers to SQL when that main transition was happening in direct marketing, and solely just had a really good digital language to accompany like my MBA in strategic language. So for me in marketing, it was like I got into that. And then I started Blue Sky Marketing in 2010, which is really when Google Ads and Facebook Ads were becoming a part of the norm. And people just didn't speak digital language at the time.
No.
It was like and we still find even when we get new people out of college, there's a whole new language they have to learn to do it correctly. Even if you grow up spending your life on social media, that's not the same as understanding the technology or understanding how to deploy it. Mm-hmm. And so I was just very fortunate that my company was founded at a time and I had a technology background that I was able to jump into digital and continue to grow with the industry.
Very cool. It's so interesting that you came in at the ground floor and was able to just see technology grow and change and see how websites have evolved since the 90s. It's really interesting.
It's really horrifying how many people still have old websites.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. So why did you start Blue Sky Marketing?
You know, I was a partner in another creative agency, and I found the creative focus was too heavy. They weren't actually looking at the strategic goals. They were just saying marketing wants to do X. Whereas when I started Blue Sky, it was much about what is the business strategy? What do we actually want to achieve this year? And then aligning the programs with those goals. The creative agency was a great place, but it was very focused on what's the headline, what's the look, not necessarily getting into the results. And that's also a reflection of 2010 was that moment in time where you suddenly were being told measure everything in digital. Mm-hmm. And so it was a good fit for my life. So that's where Blue Sky came from.
I love that. That's it's so important. You know, it's all about the strategy. Yes, you've got to have the beautiful branding, the creativity on top of it. But if you don't have that solid strategy to start, then, you know, what are you really doing it all for?
Not sure.
So what challenges did you have to overcome at the beginning of your journey?
You know, it's interesting because here we are in 2022 and all everybody's going to distributed or virtual or different. But I started virtual in 2010. And I remember having meetings where I had one marketing director who wanted to hire me, and her CEO is like, well, if she doesn't have an office, she can't be real and we're not working with her. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were actually having objections to working with us based on the fact we never had office space.
Interesting.
So we started with weird things like that in client attainment, but I had a very good core base of clients that came with me. And then over time, it was just really, as you added people, I remember when I got to about five people and I needed to stop being a control freak and a type A micromanager, I had to really step into looking at all the different project management tools. So really, like, back then it was like Basecamp, and I know Basecamp is still around, but figuring out tools we could use. And now we've been on Asana about 7 years. But it was very much like, how do we get to a solution for a server that we can all share? When you think about it, those things are also commonplace now. But yep. 2010, 2012, Dropbox, all those tools were just in their nascency. So you were really having to figure out, how are we going to handle all of our internal communications, external communications? And then that also grew up around us. So I feel like we've just been kind of, as the waves move, we go with them and say, okay, let's jump on that and make that a part of our culture.
Yeah, it would be, we take those tools for granted nowadays, you know, when, if you were trying to manage a remote team without them, that would be such a huge challenge. So kudos to you for making it happen.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
And I'm fortunate. I am very fortunate. My team now is about 16 people and we're distributed from like North Carolina, Tennessee to California, a bunch of people spread out across Texas. But one of the things that happened is because we did have those tools in place, it was really easy for us to let grow. And then even at one point I had an employee in Italy and I had an appointment in Israel and I was able to hire the best talent. So as a new tool came out, a new, you know, marketing platform, if I couldn't find the right person in Houston, I could hire anywhere in the world and plug them into our system. Yeah. And that really, I think I heard on one of your earlier podcasts talking about the idea that having access to the best talent is one of the great things about virtual. You don't have to be like, oh, well, they have to be within a 20 mile drive radius of the office.
Yeah.
You can really say, who's the right person?
Yeah, it just opens your talent pool up so much.
Truly does.
So if you had one growth tip that you could share with any up and coming agency owners, what would that be?
For me, when I talk about growth, I am very much, my new clients come from a referral process. And so one of the things that happens in agency world is it's the training is inconsistent. Meaning if I'm with one person on my account and then the person shifts, everything changes. I think growth comes from having good systems in place. I think if when my, I ask one of my long-term clients, I'm going to move you to a new person, they say, well, I know that everybody will have the same training, so I'm okay. And that allows me to kind of leverage my team to say, I'm going to take a new person and put them on a partnership. So when I'm going out and looking for new clients, I know that I can get referrals because they can say, well, no matter who she gives you on her team, they're going to be well-trained, follow a process, and you're going to get a good result. And I think too often people are focusing on growth and just throwing people at the project. Like, I got the new business in the door, and not necessarily saying, are the right techniques being applied so that everybody gets a good result?
Absolutely. It's so important. Well, let's delve into our topic. So today we're going to be talking about remote culture and managing a remote team. So let's start off by talking a little bit about the challenges that you've encountered while managing your team remotely.
You know, interestingly, I have had, the only challenges have been when we've had bad hires. And I think in the remote universe, you have enough metrics to monitor whether someone's logging in, whether they're doing their tasks, are they checking into their project management software. And so I think setting up that culture was the important piece. I'm fortunate, again, the company's 12 years old. My number one, number two, number three, and four employees are still with me. So amazing. I have that culture gets transmuted to all the new people, which really helps alleviate some of the problems you might have in that world. But I definitely think the struggle for people is getting set up for that. I think for us, you know, the day we went to having project management software, I chose the software on Friday and I loaded every one of my projects in. And I said, from now on, I'm not answering you an email. And if the CEO and the leadership don't embrace the tools, you're always going to have a problem. And I find a lot of the times in the agency world, you have a couple of people who are creative and they're like, well, I'm going to keep doing this, but I need everybody else to be over here. Mm-hmm. And I think it has to be a team model. And in the beginning, when we didn't have everybody using the same tools, there would be frustrations flaring because somebody would miss an email or somebody else was using a software or somebody was using a spreadsheet to track. And when we didn't all have the same language, it created a lot of problems for us.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes sense. So how have you standardized your employee onboarding process?
Well, since we use it, I feel like an Asana commercial, but since we use Asana for our project management for our clients, we actually have templates for onboarding new employees. And so what we tend to do is it's about 75 items long now, and it tends to be, here's how we use Dropbox. Here's how we use Asana. Here's how we use time tracking tools. Here's how we do all these things. And then we actually schedule into the template multiple reviews with different people. So if I train you on Dropbox, 2 weeks later, someone else is going to do a follow-up review with you on file naming and nomenclature to make sure. So it's not just one person doing your training. You're getting to hear from two or three different people on the same topic. So in case one person didn't speak your language and it's causing you challenges, there's a different person coming in. So our training tends to be initial training, follow-up, and it's with different people in each of them. So they're getting exposed to and getting to know the people on the team. If you think about a team of, 16 virtually or multiply it to any, you want to get to know a variety of people on your team. And if your training has them interact with a lot of those people, they start to feel less isolated in their little pod.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So I know you mentioned that you have a pretty high employee loyalty rate, retention. So what do you attest that to?
I honestly think it's my team's culture. Mm-hmm. I can be, I am a recovering type A control freak. if they had a program for it, I would be in it. And I think in the past that didn't lend itself towards good management, especially of younger people who want to have a little more latitude. And so I think what's happened is because we created a culture of here's all the tools and templates my team focuses on, when new people come on board, they're always like, let me help. And one of the things that we tend to do in training is if I say, this is the first time you're doing something, like even if it's something basic, like setting up a new Google Ads campaign, and it's just doing the brand lead questionnaire and process, we assign mentors. And so I'll be like, this person may not be in your particular team, but I'm going to have her mentor you through the steps, or I'm going to have him step in and show you. And at the beginning, they get together for like a 15-minute call and share. And because we encourage that kind of, I guess, cross-team, cross-silo, cross everything mentoring model. Yeah. I think that's really what keeps the culture together. It's not me as a leader so much as the fact that they all kind of, I guess when Zappos was and Tony Jose was around talking about holocratic management, I would say that was what we would be. But I think now it's just, they know to all train each other and they have each other's back is the simplest way to put it.
That's so awesome. It's so cool when you can see that you've built a culture like that. That's very, employees supporting each other. So that's really interesting to hear. So I know that you're using Asana and that's working really well for you. Do you have any specific tips for creating smooth operations within a remote work environment?
We're big on having standards, meaning we have rules on, and I think a lot of companies have this, but I think in virtual it's ever more important. But like our server file structure follows a specific guideline, like this folder, these folder names, you will date your files this way so that anybody can find it. In Asana, we have rules that say anything that comes in as an email from a client immediately goes into a task in Asana. Because if the client then follows up with me 3 days later, it's a Saturday, I can look in Asana and see what's going on with the project. So we do that. And then we're really, we've been really big on building out templates for even internal processes. So if we have a new media agency we're working with, like a third party for geo targeting or any type of thing like that, we actually go ahead and put a template together for that vendor that says, these are the spreadsheets. There's like, here's the current rep that we're working with, all of those details. So that when someone says, hey, I have this in my client budget, who we can immediately get people there. Mm-hmm. And I think having, I don't want to say it because we always are changing our processes and we stay very fluid. But it's good that my team's like, hey, I'll get an email. I created a new template for this because I hadn't seen one and I'm doing it for the first time. And so I think we, by one, having a set of templates that we point people to, they then feel enabled and empowered to go out and create new templates when new media come up. And we frequently have, when new media come up, like right now we're big on like TikTok ads and how will we actually make TikTok ads work? Because mm-hmm. although they're there, they're not really performing for brands in a great way at this time. Mm-hmm. But we say, who wants to be the TikTok, you know, advocate? So they're going to go out and look at like all the best practices. What can we do? What can we? And so because we do that, so I'll just send an email saying, hey, we need an advocate on this. And then someone always says they'll volunteer as tribute and jump in and go after it.
Okay,
and
very
so, cool. I think it allows us to keep the learning and it keeps us from getting stale. Sometimes yeah. when I talk about process, it feels like, oh, that's stale. And oh my God, I feel trapped. But if everybody's building the tree fort together, you don't feel trapped in the project.
Yeah, exactly. So I'd love to talk about your culture. So do you have any tips for, well, I guess, first of all, I'd love to know how you describe your unique agency culture. And then if you have any tips for building a healthy online work culture as well.
One of the first things you have to do day one is I have this old Psychology Today link that's probably 8 years old that says emails have feelings too. And one of our first rules of our culture is you have day one, like it's in our Asana, like our onboarding, is you have to read this and understand that terse responses you may think you're not. We also use the DISC profiles. So one of the things all employees, before they're hired, they fill out their DISC profile as part of the interview process so we can understand. And then when they come on board, we actually have a map with all the DISC profiles. And so as part of onboarding, we talk to people about the culture is not something's going wrong, complain to someone else. If something's going wrong in the communication, first thing to do is go read the DISC profile of the person you're struggling to communicate with. Mm-hmm. Understand.
And is that just like a personality test that they take?
It is. It's kind of like a communication style. So gotcha. Like a C is a person who's conscientious and they want all the details. I happen to be a D where I'm just going to like rapid fire questions off at you, like what this and this. It's not me challenging you. It's just how I learn. Mm-hmm. But if you recognize that this person needs a lot of detail and you tend to be fluffy, you'll find out that if you give them more detail, you might get better. So the first step we tell people in culture is the culture comes from each of you connecting with each other. And so read their DISC profile. If you start to have problems with someone and you're going back and forth. And then the other rule we lay down is if you find you're going back like question and answer three times in a task, it's time to jump on a screen share or a phone call. Because if it's taking all those questions to come out, you're going to yeah. do better actually talking to somebody.
Yeah.
Hop on the screen share, sort it out that 5 minutes, and you won't be sending off terse replies in the project management software. You're actually encouraged to talk to someone. And I think that culture of not letting it fester through a bunch of partial answers, understanding that it's kind of like in any relationship. If your communication style is here and someone else's is over here, you each have to give to the other person.
Yep.
You can't be like, well, I'm a D. You should speak to me like, you know, give me direct responses. If somebody needs that detail, provide it to them.
Like yeah.
each person, and I think one of the things we try to encourage is that for a virtual company or any company, it's that direct communication, best communication comes when both parties recognize they're a partner in the communication.
Interesting. Yeah, it's so important as a remote work to just really put an emphasis on that clear, honest communication. So that's
struggle,
really interesting.
Especially, and I don't like to talk about people generationally. I'm not big on talking the word millennials or others, but I think some people have grown up using texting and they're not an emailer and they don't realize that picking up the phone will actually benefit them. And, mm-hmm. and so I'm always like, hop on a screen share, recognizing that, you know, you don't have to be on a traditional phone, but like hop on a screen share and chat it out, FaceTime, whatever it takes, because you'll feel more comfortable with the person, the relationship will be deeper, and you'll sort it out faster.
Yeah. I know. I feel like it's old fashioned now to say, but I'm like a phone person. Like I think it's so much quicker. You can get so much more information quickly on the phone, rather than like you have a question, texting back, waiting for the person to get back to you, texting them again because they weren't clear. So yeah, it blows my mind that some people aren't like that.
Yeah. And I just think it's the aversion. I am phone averse. I get it, but I also recognize that sorting it out fast is going to be better for my personality than being frustrated with 63 lines of email exchange.
Yeah, absolutely. So what would you say has been the biggest overall challenge you've had to overcome when growing your agency in general?
Hiring people.
Okay.
You know, now it's probably, when you look at the percentage of jobs that are virtual, I think if you, again, think about 2022, for the past 2 years, has been so much virtual. But when I started in 2010, the idea of virtual positions was, and working from home wasn't as common, except in like the sales force, like people in pharmaceuticals or others. And it was really hiring the right people, which I had to learn a lot about. Mm-hmm. And I learned two things. One, how I got better at hiring, but I also got better at firing. Recognizing mm-hmm. that at the 90-day mark, if someone wasn't using the tools that we had given them, they were having to be reminded they weren't doing things on schedule, that recognized they weren't suited for our environment. Mm-hmm. And then the hiring process, the funniest thing I did was the simplest thing I did, and I almost hate to say this out loud, was I put into all job postings on Indeed, Monster, LinkedIn, all the places we advertise, the last statement is, when you send your cover letter, please, and it changes, like, tell me about your most recent favorite vacation. Tell me about your favorite podcast. Tell me about, and include that in your cover letter, because it's so easy for people just automatically hit the button saying apply and attach their files.
Yep.
It actually has made me eliminate people who don't read the directions all the way through.
Ooh, that's good. And then you can also get some of their personality in there as well.
You do. So you get like, you know, like for a while it was travel. So people would be like, you know, I went to Texas with my family, or I went to New Zealand, or they would talk about, I'd ask about a favorite marketing tool. And because it was the last thing in the application, if they didn't read it all, it just eliminated. And for me, it made vetting resumes so easy. If it wasn't there in the cover letter, they weren't able to follow directions clearly, and they weren't going to function in a virtual world where the directions were all written out.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's a really great tactical tip our listeners can use. So, knowing what you know now, is there anything you would have done differently when you were first starting out?
I would have set up project management software sooner. Mm-hmm. I would have recognized, I think in the beginning, I tried to train everybody, and I'm not a good, my communication style is not good, and I needed to do a more distributed learning like we do now, mm-hmm. recognizing that even if they wouldn't train the way I would, everybody has a different style and they need to learn from multiple people, not mm-hmm. just from the person. You think, oh, well, I'm the manager, I should, you know, train the people, but that's not always the case. Sometimes people who work next to them or on a similar project can help them learn better than I can. And I think that was a mistake in the beginning, thinking I had to be the answer.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Some people, you know, are just more cut out to training and teaching people in general. You know, it's, they're just more patient, and they're able to sort of put themselves in their shoes and take a step back. So it's definitely, there is an art to it.
It is. I actually have the person who's been with me, my first employee, and has been with me from, she was my first employee, so I hired her probably a year in. She is the exact opposite. Like I am like direct fire, short sentences. I think you're trained. She will spend 45 minutes on the same thing, and you will really be trained, and you might want to rip your hair out, but you are trained. So
yeah,
I think there's a benefit to having both sides of that.
Yeah, I think so too. So where do you see Blue Sky Marketing in 5 years time?
Oh, I hate that question. I can interview candidates who ask me that question all the time. You know, I went through the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Business Program, mm-hmm. and they made me write a 5-year growth plan. I don't know if you're familiar with the program, but Goldman Sachs has this thing, and you go through this training program, and mm-hmm. it's really intensive. I mean, you give a lot of time. They make you write a 5-year business plan, and you talk about your growth. And somewhere during the middle of the process, I realized, focusing on just growth is kind of like the hedonic treadmill where it's like, oh, I'm going to grow and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And for my, in your personal life. And I realized that my growth and my goals need to be, I want my team to be happy. I want to be working with clients we love. Mm-hmm. And I want us to keep learning new things. And as an agency, it's an unusual because most people are like growth, growth, growth.
Yeah.
We actually every year go through a process and I call it culling the herd, but we identify clients that either because we disagree in philosophy or process that we're not able to actually help their business grow. Mm-hmm. And we will actually resign clients in Q4, leaving room to add new clients in Q1 with the thinking that the other, they'll be happier with an agency who's more aligned with the way they think versus us. So my 5-year plan and where will Blue Sky be is we will be really smart marketers executing really great digital marketing and other marketing programs with clients we love mm-hmm. and doing it from all over the world.
Yeah, that's a great answer. I love that. So we are getting ready to wrap up here shortly, but first we have the Fast Five, which are 5 rapid fire questions.
All right.
So what's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
The one I'm reading right now is the one I'm going to mention. It's Atlas of the Heart by Brené Brown. She is a PhD, and it talks about the 87 common emotions in the U.S. culture. And she won't let the book be translated to other languages because she thinks it's very specific to our culture and the North American culture.
Interesting.
But it's interesting because she says most people, when they speak out their languages, have like 4. They're angry, they're happy, they're sad. Like, that's it. But there's actually like 87. And if you learn to actually identify your emotions and use language that uses those emotions, you can connect better. And so when I read about the book, I was like, or heard a podcast about the book, I was like, well, that's so relevant for marketing, right? Like if you only layer your emotions into the 4 common words, then your marketing messages aren't going to resonate with all the emotions everyone's feeling. Mm-hmm. So I'm listening to that one right now on my daily walks, absorbing all the emotions that exist.
Interesting. Yes. And it ties in really well with managing a remote team as well, you know, just really dialing in your communication. So yeah, that's a really interesting book. I love Brené Brown. So I'll have to check that out.
It's a good one. It's brand new.
What does your morning routine look like?
I am one of those terrible morning people, but I open eyes and open laptop. Like there's no process.
open laptop.
That's it. Like I used to wait, set my alarm for 4 and by 4:03, I'd be answering emails. You know what I mean? So like I am, and I don't even like need coffee. I'm naturally a morning person. Mm-hmm. And my husband will wake up around 6:30 and be like, you want coffee? During COVID, I actually gave myself the grace. I don't set an alarm anymore. I live completely off the alarm. Mm-hmm. And so now I get up around 5:15, 5:30 most days, but I still open eyes, open laptop.
Nice. And is there a CEO that you follow or study?
It's an interesting question because I used to follow like a lot of different people, but I wouldn't consider them CEOs. I think I grew up in an entrepreneurial family, as we talked about, and I'm mm-hmm. the youngest of 8 children. And almost every one of my siblings has at one point owned their own business.
Oh, wow.
So I was fortunate to learn. My father was a really smart businessman, but he also had a really big heart. And I think I learned a lot about business at home. Mm-hmm. And so I haven't necessarily followed external CEOs. Maybe I should find a couple. Who would you follow?
I follow other SaaS founders. So there's one, it's a blog I follow and it's called Journey to 100K. And if you just Google that, it comes up. It's the founder of Groove HQ. And it just has some really great information about their journey of building their software. And it's super inspiring.
I'll have to look that one up.
Yeah, I'd highly recommend it. And what is your favorite online tool?
I've always been a perennial fan of Google Trends. Mm-hmm. I like just looking up, seeing what people are searching, what people are doing. I think Uber Suggests, the Chrome extension link, has come along past couple of years. Big fan of it. And I've already talked about Asana 63 times, but I'm known in my office for the phrase, comments get forgotten, tasks get done. Mm-hmm. And so I would have to say comments get forgotten, tasks get done.
Awesome. Last question. What's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
This is an easy one. Every experience is a learning opportunity. Even the ones that feel terrible and feel miserable at the time, if you fail forward to grow and learn, you're going to win. And I think people are afraid of failing, but sometimes your worst failures are where you learn the most and come out of it stronger.
Yes, I love that. Great advice.
I was terrified of failing at everything in the beginning. And now, well, that didn't work. Let's try a different direction.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like obviously try to win, try not to fail. But when you fail, you know, make the most of it, learn from it and move on. Don't make that mistake twice.
And also just accept that you made the mistake. Say it. You know, I did this wrong. I forgot to do this. I sent this to the wrong person. Just acknowledge you made the mistake so that people can help you recover from the mistake.
Yeah.
And I think failure is such a crime in our culture that people try to hide what's gone wrong and then no one can help them.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Michelle. It was a pleasure to have you on the podcast and I really enjoyed our conversation. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Julia. I appreciate being here.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast, and we'll see you next time.